So we're starting a new series today. We're going through the Book of Ruth. We did surveys where I was trying to figure out what people wanted to read. And so a lot of people said the Book of Ruth. And so we're doing the Book of Ruth because I was wanting to do that anyway. But the Book of Ruth is a really cool story that I'm actually going to start reading it before I go. But
do we need pens?
Probably. There should be pens behind you.
Not where Ruth was.
Yee. Yeah. So there's a few things that are very important when you're reading the Book of Ruth. And the first one is in verse 1. It says, in the days when the judges ruled. It says, in the days when the judges ruled. And that little phrase packs most of the punch of what you should be learning from the Book of Ruth. So everything else needs to be in that context. You can talk to me about the Book of Judges. What's going on in the Book of Judges?
Israel does not have a king yet.
Mm-hmm. Israel does not have a king. That's actually a very big thing. What else is happening in the Book of Judges?
Ehud.
Yep. So you have specific judges.
Ehud,
so
prophet.
In the Book of Judges, would you say that Israel is pretty morally righteous in the Book of Judges?
On and off.
So sometimes there's a sense in which it's on and off, but it's actually a downward spiral. Over the Book of Judges, they do kind of go through these phases of repentance, but even as they repent, the judges that save Israel are getting more and more unrighteous as you go through the book. The entire nation itself is getting extremely unrighteous, and there are sections of God blessing them and, like, you know, saving them. But overall, the Book of Judges is a time that's defined by God judging Israel. So it's getting bad. Israel's really unrighteous. Eventually, we're going to do the story of the Benjamite. And in fact, I actually think we already have. But we talked about some of the extraordinary degradation that, you know, happens in the Book of Judges. So one of the things that you see is that, is Ruth taking place in a good or bad period of Israel's history?
Bad.
This is not the reign of Solomon. This is not a period of time where God's, like, blessing Israel. This is a very dark period of Israel's history. And so one of the extremely important things, like, I'm going to actually write this on the board, but there's a couple things that you need to kind of be paying attention to when you read the Book of Ruth. The first one is that God is faithful to individuals. How am I going to write this in a short way? God cares about individuals. We're going to pretend that is the correct way to spell that. Right? That was supposed to be an I, it became a V, and I didn't care enough to erase it. So, God cares about individuals and wicked nations. Because there's a lot of situations where you see God in the Bible judging nations. You have Israel getting carried off into captivity. But even when Israel gets carried off into captivity, you still have people like Daniel where God's working with individuals. And for us, this is something that's potentially going to be very encouraging over the next few decades. Because America is getting further and further down the pipes. And pretty soon, things are going to get worse. And so we very well might be entering into a time of history where God's going to be judging a nation, and we're going to be people in that nation. And so one of the things that you need to think about is, when God judges a nation, does that mean that every single person in that nation is under God's judgment? And the answer is no. And there is a sense in which even the people that are righteous in that nation suffer. Like, Daniel didn't get to stay in Israel. But it's really important to see that even when God is judging a nation, he takes care of the individuals in that nation. So that's pretty important. But then there's a second thing that's also important. It's not just that God is faithful to individuals in wicked nations, but something that you should kind of notice is that there are faithful individuals in wicked nations. And I'm actually just going to leave those up there today, because these are two things that I want you to have in mind throughout the entire book of Ruth. God is faithful to individuals even when he is judging the groups they are in, and there are faithful people even in wicked nations. So Ruth is an example of both of these things, and if you don't know anything about the time of the judges, it's really easy to miss two of the largest applications that you can glean from the book of Ruth. So that's one thing. But there's one more thing that's also extremely valuable. in the book of Ruth, you're not going to see any miracles. There's not going to be situations where God raises from someone from the dead. God's not going to split the Red Sea. God's not going to like resurrect a dead person. Like, there are no miracles in the book of Judges. Instead, what you see is that God works through happenstances. Like, you'll have sections of the book of Ruth where God just says, oh, and it happened that XYZ happened, or XYZ person did a thing. And something that we see is anything truly random? Is anything ever truly random? No. Because God's in control of the random things that happen. So in Ruth, you see God working through providence. And one of the things that makes that really exciting and interesting is, does God work in miracles really often in the modern day? Do you usually see people just rising from the dead? Like, no. You don't really see that. That's not often how God works. So instead, we look at to see things like the book of Ruth and the book of Esther, where God works through providence, which is the way that he works in the modern day. So this is particularly helpful to us because sometimes, like, we're going through life and we're having a hard time and we don't see, quote, miracles happening. And so we might think to ourselves, oh, God's not here. Maybe God was able to help Samson, but I don't have super strength. Maybe God was able to help Moses, but I can't split an ocean. You know, how's God going to help me today? And so books of like Ruth and Esther, where we see God work back then, like he works today, are extremely exciting for that reason. So we're gonna first of all read through the entire chapter. We're just gonna go around the circle and we're each gonna take one verse, and then we're gonna go back through it and talk about some of the important stuff. So I'll start. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons.
The man's name was Elimelech, and yep. His wife was Naomi. Their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephratites from Bethlehem in the land of Judah. And when they reached Moab, they settled there.
But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons.
These took Moabite wives. Names of one of these were Orpah, and the other one, wait, is it Orpah?
It's Orpah.
Orpah. Orpah.
And the other one, Ruth.
And they lived there about 10 years.
And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so the woman was left without her two sons and her husband.
Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, to return to from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited the people and given them food.
So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah.
But on the way, Naomi said to her two daughters-in-laws, "Go back to your mother's homes, and may the Lord reward you for your kindness to your husband and to me.
The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept.
And they said to her, "No, we will return to you, with you, to your people."
But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands?
Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons.
Would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters. For it is exceedingly bitter to me, for your sake, that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me."
And again they wept together, and Orpah raised her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung tightly to Naomi.
And she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law."
But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you, or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God.
Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you."
And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more.
So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?"
"Don't call me Naomi," she responded. "Instead, call me Mara, for the Almighty has made life very bitter for me."
I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi, when the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?
So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from their country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest.
All right. So that's the chapter that we're going to be talking about and talking through. And there's a few things that are, we're actually just going to go through and just talk about the important stuff. So in verse 1, when it talks about how this is taking place in the days of the judges, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So you see that this is in the time of the judges, where in general, God is judging the nation of Israel, but also this is a time of famine. So not only is this generally a bad time, but we meet these people in the context of God judging Israel, you know, kind of directly. So they go, and they go to the land of Moab, which something that's important about the land of Moab. This is something that we've talked about before on a Sunday, but in Deuteronomy 23:3-4, this is a law that Moses makes for Israel. He says, no Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord, even to the 10th generation. None of them may enter the assembly of the Lord forever, because they did not meet you with bread and water on the way when you came out from Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pethor of Mesopotamia to curse you. So one of the things you see is that Israel is in judgment, but the country of Moab is actually in more judgment. Moab as a nation has made itself an enemy of Israel and an enemy of God. And so you see them going to Moab, and real quick, you guys probably already have some background knowledge about the book of Ruth, but where's Ruth from? Anyone know?
It says it in verse 22.
It does say it in verse 22.
We just read it.
We did just read it. Where's Ruth from? They're going to Moab. Naomi's sons get married in Moab. One of those sons marries Ruth, who...
It starts with an M.
It starts with an M.
It ends with a Moab. Moab.
Moab. So we just read this thing. We're like, you know, Moab has made itself an enemy of Israel and God. Ruth is from Moab. Ruth is a Moabitess. And so one of the things that you also see is, again, God cares about individuals in wicked nations. So Moab as a country is an enemy of God. Moab as a country is against God. But one of the things you're going to see is God taking care of Ruth, and Ruth being allowed to enter Israel. Which also, since we're talking about it, no Ammonite or Moabite may enter the assembly of the Lord even to the 10th generation. A lot of people read this, and they read the book of Ruth, and they're like, okay, why in the world was Ruth allowed to enter the assembly of the Lord? Answer, she was a woman. There are specific things that women had privilege that men did not. A man and a man's lineage would not be able to enter the assembly of the Lord for a 10th generation, but Ruth wasn't the mother of her lineage. Instead, the father of that lineage was the one that married her, which was, I think... I don't know. Does it say which guy married which daughter? I don't think it does.
You just said a man.
Yeah. So Ruth, yeah, so like it's not Ruth's lineage. Ooh, okay. But yeah, but I'm just going to answer that question because it will come up. It should come up. The reason that Ruth was able to enter the assembly is that Ruth was a woman, so it's not her lineage entering. Not that anyone cared. Anyways, so that's actually another thing that's really major, is that we get to see that, okay, God's not just being faithful to Israelites when he's judging Israel. God's being faithful to individual Moabites when he's judging Moab. So, really big thing. God cares about individuals. Anyways, verse 3. The name of the man was Elimelech, or verse 2, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, and these were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah, and they went out into the country of Moab and remained there. So something else that's really major. Who's the main character of the book of Ruth?
Naomi.
So here's the thing. Most people, if I say who's the main character of Ruth, they immediately say Ruth. Why then is the first person introduced Naomi? Or I should say Naomi's husband and sons who die, but Naomi.
Because
she's the oldest.
Soon to be Mara.
So one thing that's actually really important, Ruth is not the main character of the Book of Ruth. Some spicy hot takes. Ruth is not the main character of the Book of Ruth. Naomi is. This is Naomi's story. Naomi is the person who's introduced. It's Naomi whose husband and sons die.
Wait, Ruth.
So Ruth is one of the main characters, and like the book is obviously named for her, and probably the most important character you could argue is Ruth, but this is Naomi's story. It starts with Naomi, it follows Naomi, and it ends with Naomi. So that's something that I want you guys to kind of see. Read this story and watch this story from Naomi's perspective. Naomi is the one who has the most important arc, and Naomi is the one that you get to see God's provision for, which you also see God's provision for Ruth, but this is primarily about Naomi. So Naomi goes, in verse 4, these took Moabite wives, blah, 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 blah. And then verse 5, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband, the woman. At this point, we're still super far down here. We've introduced Orpah and Ruth, and it's still saying the woman. As though, if I say the woman, you obviously know which one matters, Naomi. So again, Naomi is the main character. Read this story from Naomi's perspective. But if we just take a look at where she is at the end of verse 5, Naomi is in a strange land. She's in Moab. She's not in her homeland. Her husband, which back in these days, if you were a woman, the way that you survived is that your husband took care of you. The man was the one who provided financially. And if you were left without a husband, you were poor. You know, throughout the Bible, it talks about taking care of the widow and the poor person. In the New Testament, it even says, take care of widows who are widows indeed. So being a widow is basically synonymous with being poor. Like, at this point, Naomi has no husband. She has no sons to take care of her. Like, if your husband died, your sons would take care of you, and now she doesn't have those. So Naomi, as well as both of her daughters-in-law, are in this situation, but you also see Naomi is too old to get remarried. So Naomi is just, like, she's basically screwed. That's really just the point that's being made, is that she's in a rough situation. She has no family, she's in a foreign land, and she has no financial stability. So that sucks. In verse 6, wait a minute. Okay, cool. In verse 6, you see that she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab to Israel because she had heard that the Lord had visited his people and had given them food. So now we're kind of like doing that Judges cycle again where things are starting to go a bit better for Israel. Naomi hears about it. She goes. But notice again, it was not Ruth that made the decision to go. It's Naomi. We're following Naomi's decisions. So in verse 7, so she set out from the place where she was with her daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to her with her to the land of Judah. So her daughters-in-law are following her, by the way. Which one of the things that you kind of see is that there's a lot of suffering going on, but her daughters-in-law are following her. They didn't bail. And so God's actually providing Naomi with some community and with some family, even in the midst of this pain and mourning. But in verse 8, but Naomi said to each of her two daughters-in-law, go, return each of you to your mother's house. So God's given Naomi this group of people that can comfort her. And in her mourning and suffering, Naomi's trying to send them away. And have you ever seen people like that, that like they're suffering, they're having a hard time, and in their pain, they try to make it worse for themselves? That's basically what Naomi is doing, which this is motivated in a sense out of love for the two daughters-in-law as well. Like she says, may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with me and the dead, and the Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. So Naomi is saying, like, go. You guys are going to be widows. You guys are going to a foreign land. You're going to be poor. You're young enough to go get remarried. Go, marry someone. Have a good life. Have someone who can take care of you and provide you for you. So she's motivated by loving kindness, but also she's kind of taking this gift that she has and she's throwing it aside. And so they lifted their voices and they left. And in verse 10, they said to her, no, we will return with you to your people. So Naomi and Orpah, or sorry, so Ruth and Orpah are like, nah, man, we're here for you. And Naomi, instead of being like, okay, is like, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? So she's saying, even if I give birth today, I'm not going to have kids that can take care of you. And so she's still encouraging, like she's pressing them hard to go, and Orpah leaves. And so in verse 14, they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So Orpah leaves, but even as Naomi is trying to get rid of the support structure that God has let her keep, Ruth stays. So God is actually making it so that even though Naomi is trying to get rid of Ruth, God won't let her succeed. God is even in this situation making sure that Naomi isn't alone. God's taking care of her in ways that she doesn't necessarily see. And so in verse 15, Naomi sees that Ruth clings to her, and for a third time, Naomi's trying to get rid of her. And she says, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." And in verse 16, you see some stuff that's very important. "But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you will go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do to me and more, if anything but death parts me from you.'" So, something that's very important. We talked in the past about how foreigners were allowed into Israel if they did what? Who remembers? I think you guys were there that day. So, foreigners were allowed into the nation of Israel if they did what? What could they not bring with them?
Religion.
Their religion. That's right. So Israel was a multi-ethnic group of people. We talked about, you know, Uriah the Hittite, for example, was a Hittite, not an Israelite. We talked about Ruth the Moabitess. We talked about Rahab. We talked about different examples of people that were not Israelites coming into the assembly of Israel. And the rule was that you couldn't bring your religion with you. So in this section, verse 15 and 17, a lot of people look at that and they'll say, this is Ruth's conversion. And one of the things that you do see is that she says, "Your people shall be my people and your God, my God." So she's not bringing her Moabite idols with her. She's actually submitting to Yahweh, right? And something that is also valuable is that this isn't a blind conversion. How long were Naomi and her sons in the land of Moab?
10 years.
10 years. So Ruth would have had knowledge of the Israelite God. Based on what we see just in general about Ruth and this family, they would have talked to her about it. Odds are, like, there's a solid chance that Ruth was already, you know, practicing Judaism with her husband, which we don't know that for sure, but at least we know that Ruth knows what she's saying right now. Like, she knows the commitment that she's making, and she's choosing to make it.
So how old would Ruth be?
I don't know. Yeah, that's my whole answer. Young enough to remarry, but I don't know. Maybe she's 20. I mean, let's just guess that she got married when she was 15. Like, that's probably pretty reasonable. If she got married, we'll say 5 years into the time that Naomi and her husband were in that nation, maybe she's 20, and then she's dying. So, like, maybe she's about my age or Taylor and Drew's age. So my answer is I have absolutely no idea, but I think that 20 is probably a reasonable age.
According to Google, it says she was 40 when she married Boaz, but also it's given some weird book references, so I don't know where that's from.
Yeah.
Jehovah's Witnesses.
Jehovah's Witnesses? Mind. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I was going to say, man, I've read the Book of Ruth a lot of times, and I have no idea where they would get the number 42.
So I was looking up how old Joseph was when he married Mary, and it said 100 years old. So.
Yeah, don't trust the internet.
I think Abe Lincoln said that.
Yeah, I mean, hey man, Abraham Lincoln said, don't trust everything you read on the internet.
Oh,
yep, that's why we don't find our answers from Google and Jehovah's Witnesses. Anyways.
Yes.
So, but Ruth is committing to the God of Israel right now. And so that's extremely important. And in verse 18, when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So after that, now they return. And in verse 19, it says, "So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, 'Is this Naomi?'" So this is something else that you see. This is, again, a situation where God's being very kind to Naomi. Again, how long was Naomi not in Israel?
10 years.
That's a solid bit of time.
How do they remember her?
Which, on one hand, it's like smaller towns, and it's not necessarily completely amazing that they remember her, but also, yes, 10 years later, there's nothing to assume that she would have been prominent the 10 years before when she was there. There's nothing to say that all of the people in that town would be the same people, and even if it were the same people, there's nothing to say that they'd remember her.
How do they remember her name?
So they come back 10 years later, and here's what you see. Naomi is mourning. Naomi has lost her husband. Naomi has lost her sons. Naomi is in a situation where she has no financial security. And she's now leaving her home of 10 years. And she's coming back to Israel to be in the people of Israel. But there's nothing that would have said that this would have been a familiar place. It could have been the same landscape with completely different people. But 10 years later, Naomi is entering in and she's in a community. The people already knew who she is. The people already care about her. And so God's providing her Ruth, where she hasn't lost her whole family. God's making sure that Ruth stays with her, but God is also allowing her to come back into a community. And so even though Naomi doesn't necessarily see it, God is taking care of her. And you see in verse 20, she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi," which Naomi means pleasant, "but instead call me Mara." And Mara means bitter. "For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me." So in her pain, Naomi's not looking around and thinking, oh, look at all the ways that God's being kind to me in this. He's making sure that Ruth stays with me. I'm entering into community. Like, Naomi doesn't see that. When she looks at this situation, she says, God is ruining me. God has brought this suffering upon me. But as I'm talking about this, and as I'm talking about God, you know, providing for Naomi in the pain, I don't want to minimize the pain that she was feeling. Her husband did die. Her sons did die. She is coming into a life of poverty. This is genuinely extraordinarily hard. But one of the things that you need to think about is this. God's presence does not mean that hard things don't happen. And sometimes we think that we become a Christian and that if we're on good terms with God, that everything in life goes hunky-dory, that we don't get sick, that we don't lose our job, that we don't go through hard times. And that's not the case. God's goal with Christians is not to make our lives heaven on earth. God's goal with Christians is not to make your life perfect now. That's not his plan. You will eventually have a perfect life, but it's not going to be here. This earth is still broken. We are still sinful. And something that I want to throw your way. If every single time a Christian got sick, you know, whenever a Christian gets sick, they talk to the people in the church and they say, hey guys, pray that God would heal them. If every single time a Christian got sick, God said yes to those prayers of healing, every Christian would be immortal. But that's not how things are supposed to work. That's not how things are going to work. And so God lets suffering happen in life. Suffering does happen in life. God never promises that this life is going to be enjoyable. But God's presence instead means that even as Naomi is going through difficulty, even as Naomi is having hard times, and by the way, even as you are having hard times, when you lose a job, when you have a death in the family, when you get sick, even when you are having hard times, God's presence means that he's still going to be there providing for you, but it doesn't mean the absence of pain. And that's another thing that's very valuable to kind of glean from the story of Naomi. Naomi's having God's presence did not mean that everything was perfect, but you still see things where God's taking care of her. God gives her Ruth. And at this stage in the story, she doesn't realize how big of a gift that is. But God gives her Ruth. God gives her a community. And God is still watching over Naomi. God is still watching over this individual, even as he's judging the nations that she was in. And so something that's very interesting that I've always thought was hilarious when I read the book of Ruth. What does Naomi tell people to call her?
Mara.
In verse 22, it says, "So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her." What is God still calling Naomi?
Naomi.
The narrator is still calling Naomi, Naomi. And so Naomi is looking at her situation, and she's thinking to herself, man, God has dealt bitterly with me. But God is looking at Naomi's situation, and he's saying, no, I'm not. I'm still watching over you, and you don't see the rest of this story, but I do. And one of the things for you to think about is that a lot of times we're short-sighted, and we look at our situation in the immediate present, and we're like, man, this picture, it doesn't look very good. But God's not looking at a picture. God's looking at the whole movie. And for Naomi, she's struggling right now, absolutely, but God has a plan for her. So they return from the country of Moab, and they did it at the beginning of the barley harvest. So this entire chapter, one of the things that you again notice is that very little of this chapter has been devoted to Ruth. You have Ruth's name mentioned like once in verse 4, where it's talking about who married who. You have Ruth refusing to leave Naomi when she tries to get rid of her. And you have Ruth proclaiming identification with Yahweh. So Ruth does a few things. But overall, this first chapter, this is the story of Naomi. This is Naomi making decisions. This is Naomi suffering. This is Naomi looking at her situation. And this story of Ruth is Naomi being taken care of. So we set the scene. And it's going to be very important to kind of think of the rest of the book in the terms of this context. But while we're reading, remember that God cares about individuals in wicked nations, and there are faithful individuals in wicked nations. And that's something that's very valuable to see from Ruth. But also, it's important to remember that there is suffering in life. Ruth is an example of Naomi suffering, and suffering genuinely. God does not promise that your life is going to be pleasant, but God does promise to be with you. And Ruth is a lovely example of that. And I'm very excited to go through the book of Ruth with you, and we're going to start getting into like Ruth proper, the portion of the story that people generally think about. But as you're listening to the story, view it through the eyes of Naomi. Follow it through the eyes of Naomi. Think about it from her perspective. Because this is the story of Ruth, yes, but it's primarily the story of Naomi. But with that, bow our heads, pray it out. Lord, thank you that you give us such captivating stories. You don't always give us lessons in the format of a lesson, like the way that a lot of the epistles are written, but you teach us so much about yourself and so much about our lives through stories. Lord, you give us narratives. You give us beautiful narratives. And Lord, you show us the experiences of other people, and you show us how you've been faithful in the lives of other people so that we can see and learn about how you can be faithful to us as well. Lord, the story of Ruth is not necessarily one-to-one with our experience, but we still get to see your character, and we still get to see just things that function in life. I pray that we would enjoy the narrative of Ruth, that we would genuinely enjoy the story that you've given us, but Lord, also that we would learn about you from it, and that we would learn about, you know, all the different things it covers. And I pray these things in the name of our King Jesus Christ. Amen.